My name is Erin Kenny. I am a registered dietitian, holistic cannabis practitioner, and master of nutrition science. Welcome to my podcast, Nutrition Rewired, where I share cutting-edge, practical advice to improve your health and debunk myths to help you rewire the way you think about nutrition and wellness. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others, including but not limited to patients that you are treating. Consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. In this episode, I am joined by Dr. Bobby and Dr. Jess, who are fantastic physical therapists with years of experience and multiple advanced certifications to help effectively address and treat their patients' pain in order to get them back to their health and fitness goals. In today's episode, we talk about dizziness and vertigo. We talk about migraines. We also talk about dry needling and how this can be involved in injury treatment. We talk about NSAID use and alternative remedies for inflammation and what the optimal fitness routine looks like and why it's so important to diversify it. Before we dive in, I wanted to remind you all that if you're interested in working one-on-one with me or applying for the next group coaching program, which starts in August, you can go to nutritionrewired.com. This group is a great option for anyone who has struggled with chronic digestive issues, whether it's GERD, inflammatory bowel disease, diarrhea, constipation, horrible bloating. Any and all of the above are things that we cover in the group coaching program, and you still receive one-on-one personalized attention and 24/7 chat support, which is all of what you get in the one-on-one option as well. So enjoy today's episode. Well, hello, Dr. Jess and Dr. Bobby. It's so great to have you both on the podcast today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know we all got a chance to sit down and chat on your podcast, which was great. Really fun conversation, and I'm excited to have you both here today. I'm very curious what kind of led you both into this field of where you practice.
So physical therapy, I was one of those individuals that as a child, I just knew I wanted to go into healthcare. I used my kitchen set in my playroom as my waiting room for my for my siblings. We had a couch in our playroom, and that was their waiting area. And I had my little Fisher-Price kit, and I would wrap up my siblings in ACE bandages. And you know, if my mom brought home a box of Band-Aids, I was like, "You're the best!" I've just always had this inherent interest in healthcare. And then once I was in high school, I had a project a senior project where we had to figure out a business that we would market one day. So, and I really tried to take it seriously. Like, what would I do one day? Like, how would I grow a business? And I kind of looked into, I always thought I'd go into med school, and I did some observation and I didn't actually love it. I didn't love just like how quick you were to give out prescriptions and how fast you were kind of running in between rooms. And then I played a lot of sports. And so I looked at athletic training, and I was like, that the balance of my life doesn't, I don't really want to travel to other states, you know, for weekends, for games and stuff like that. And so then one of my neighbors was a physical therapist. And so I went to work with him one day for observation. And it was just like, he a small private practice physical therapist, and he helped somebody with vertigo. He helped somebody with headaches. He helped people with knee pain, back pain, hip pain, all sorts of stuff. He knew his patients. He knew their families. And I was like, this is what I want. And I was a senior in high school at that point and just never looked back. So yeah, it was, for me, it was very straightforward, like journey. So I'm just lucky in that regard that I was able to figure it out at a young age.
That's amazing. And I want to dive into that after we hear from Dr. Bobby about, you know, when I think of physical therapy, I just think of, you know, growing up as a runner, an athlete, like, oh, you know, I break something or injure something. And it's as simple as the kinesiology of like getting me back onto the field. And some things that you just mentioned that physical therapists can do, I do want to come back to that. But Dr. Bobby, let's hear from you as well.
So after I was young and I wanted to be a teacher, which ultimately being a physical therapist is teaching in a way, I just always said I wanted to teach people to walk again. I didn't know what that meant, but after major incidents, I wanted to help people get back to their life. And that has evolved over time into physical therapy. And I did initially start in physical therapy, like after strokes, like teaching people how to sit, how to stand, like redoing all of that. And now I'm more into the ortho with Dr. Jess of like really looking at more of a, both Dr. Jess and I help obviously people that are injured, but also looking at that preventative side of things and really try to take our healthcare from reactive to being proactive with things.
That's wonderful. I love that. Yeah. I mean, that's where I think we would all love to be. I personally would love to work with people before they get sick. Unfortunately, usually not when people contact me, but you know, that preventative side of healthcare, I think is a huge barrier to our system in general. And I think we need better systems in place to really help individuals think of, you know, health and wellness from a preventative standpoint. And if we can do that, you know, I think that's the best place to be and start as young as possible.
It's all about, for me, especially when working with patients, it's really about mindset. And instead of seeing it as, so I'm coming to physical therapy because I have pain on the inside of my knee and it's not allowing me to be able to walk without pain or go up and down stairs. So that's a starting point. It's a reactive starting point, which is fine. That's normally where I meet people. The growth journey that we really try and do here at our practice is really try and help people understand how can I get one ahead of the next injury, but actually think about it a little bit further than that and understand that in this country, like we are dying of preventable illness. Our top three leading causes of death are oftentimes preventable. And so we've got heart disease and all sorts of like issues that happen within our systems that lifestyle is contributing to. And it doesn't have to be something that is taking us out and shortening our lifespans. Mm-hmm. And so how can we think about movement and health as something that is honestly giving you more years to live? And I mean, you know, blue zones are something Dr. Bobby and I are really into right now and understanding what communities in the world are living the longest and healthiest. It's not just about long lives that are miserable at the end, but leading a long life that's healthy. And then at the end of your life, it's really like you go into organ failure and die. It's a very fast decline. And, you know, but up until that happens, like you have a very solid quality of life. And in the US, I just see it so often that as people age, this decline, it really starts happening way, way, way too young. And it leads to so much like just decreased mobility, lack of independence, use of facilities at a younger and younger age. And it sometimes isn't preventable. Sometimes it is. So in my role, if I can help anybody not do that slow decline and stay at this productive level for longer and longer until honestly, hopefully organ failure and boom, you're out, right? Nobody's going to live forever, but yeah. Like have quality years when you're young and old. And really it just comes down to how can I invest in my health and what does that look like? And what are small steps that I can take now that will help me 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now? So if you stay consistent with it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to come back to the point you made about, you know, kind of some of the things that physical therapists do that people might not be aware of. So you mentioned even something like migraines. What are some other conditions that physical therapists can help with that aren't kind of the obvious, like the one you mentioned, oh, I have knee pain, you know, I need to go to physical therapy?
Well, I think vestibular issues are things that I think people don't quite realize. So vestibular is inner ear. And when you have an imbalance or something, there's all sorts of different things that can happen. Whether you've got a neuritis or something called BPPV, which creates a spitting sensation versus just like uneven dizziness. There's lots of forms of dizziness. But if there is dysfunction with vestibular system, that is something that falls right within the realm of physical therapy. And it can be very detrimental to how you're functioning if it's not working well, right? Like you can't walk across your room without feeling like you're going to vomit or bump into something. So vestibular therapy is practiced on, you know, in short-term rehab as well as on the outpatient side as well. So it just kind of depends on severity and what's going on.
Oh, that's fascinating, because I know a lot of patients who will complain of those types of vestibular issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from my expertise, you know, looking at nutrient deficiencies, I've tried to do a decent amount of research on some root cause potentials there. Mm-hmm. So that's fascinating. And can you give me like a little bit more on how you're treating that? Like, what does that look like if a patient comes in and is having those types of complaints?
Well, it starts with the evaluation. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different things that could be causing it, right? So first we have to do, there's different tests that we do to see, is it a semicircular canal issue? Is it affecting one vestibular nerve on one side, on the other side? Is it, it gets pretty actually complicated with like all of the different things that could be going on. Mm-hmm. But it really comes down to its differential diagnosis, right? So you kind of have to rule in and rule out different possibilities. Consider also, right, could it be a medication interaction, right? Have they recently had, you know, something that's, if your testing is just blah, like nothing's really popping out as positive, like we should see these positive signs. If it's this, we're going to see this. If it's this, we're going to see this. And if that's not happening and it's just more kind of generalized and we can't really provoke it or get it a little bit calmer, give some strategies, then we're going to go ahead and say, hey, let's go ahead and look for some additional testing here and see, could it be maybe do some blood work, maybe do look at that recent medication that was given 3 weeks ago that's now built up into your blood system. Those things like that. So it doesn't have to be something that is always treatable in physical therapy. There are times where we have to look outside of it. But if it is inside and we do have a positive test, then it's just like anything else. If there's a deficiency, we build it up. So if we've got one ear that's telling you a nice normal signal of where's my head in space, and the other ear is like, ah, then you're like, oh man, like you just feel like you're all out of sorts. So we use other strategies to help calm this down, because other ways our brain can receive where is my head in space, right? I can use vision, for example. So if I use what's called gaze stabilization, so, you know, when you try and stand on one leg, people say stare at something across the room that's not moving, and it helps you. All of a sudden, you stand better, right? You're using a strategy called gaze stabilization. So we can use gaze stabilization to help with the movements that are provocative or difficult for you to do in order to simmer down the symptoms. And then the brain starts to realize, oh, wait, this isn't actually right. Mm-hmm. This is right. And then we start making the correct signals as loud as possible. And so we tap into other proprioceptive feedback. So we've got proprioceptors in the back of the neck. And so doing some stabilization through the neck can also tell the brain, okay, I'm neutral. I'm not moving. I'm not spinning. I am still, I can touch something. I can have something touch the back of my head. There's all sorts of different things. I can touch a wall. I can ground myself. And then that helps me know where is my body in space. And this signal that was so loud, and it gets louder if I close my eyes because now I took vision away, right? And that makes my brain listen to this. Now I get that signal to be quieter and quieter. And then there's exercises that we do, whether it's a VOR exercise or other types of things, to actually start to balance this back out again. So it's about decreasing symptoms and improving function of whatever's not functioning well.
Wow. That's incredible. I like I said, I've never known that physical therapy could be a way to address that. And it sounds like, you know, you guys take a very holistic approach.
Oh, absolutely.
One of my favorite things that people don't know about is headaches. You know, we talk about migraines. Most people, when we classify them as migraines, aren't really migraines. And the majority of them, not all, there are some like true migraines, but the majority of them are coming from your neck. So speaking on dizziness, we found if you needle through, like with an acupuncture needle, your obliquus capitis, it's your obliquus capitis inferior muscle. It's just a small muscle in the back. It's a huge producer of dizziness. So they've done research where they kind of just stick needles into that area and people's dizziness is gone. And it's really not everyone's, but like they've had some really good improvement on that. So I just think it is not people shouldn't live with like headaches. I think that's a huge one. I'm big on treating headaches, and they are very much treatable without medication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think headaches.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. there's just the, when we say headache, right, there's like a lot of types of headaches. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just like a dehydration headache, right? There's, or a vascular migraine. It could be a cervicogenic headache. It could be a tension type headache. It could be a combination of. Sometimes it's more than one. Oh my gosh, what a concept. This mm-hmm. happens, right? So you can have a type of headache that is your typical type of headache. Maybe it's a tension type that could turn into something else, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of different ways of assessing and treating headaches as well. It's not a one size fits all, just like dizziness. It could be a vestibular nerve. It could be proprioceptive, right? Which is what Dr. Bibe is talking about with that muscle in the neck. It could be both. Mm-hmm. And that's why a good eval will help really tease out. Like, you have to do a good eval. You have to every time. Otherwise, what are you treating? Like, you're just going to give somebody gaze stabilization and it's like actually like a cervicogenic dizziness. That's not going to work. You know, like, I mean, it'll like simmer symptoms down a little bit, but that's about it. You're not going to get resolution. Mm-hmm. So it's really trying to understand what are all of the potential possibilities for why the person is experiencing X, Y, or Z, and like actually ruling in and ruling out. And that's what our healthcare system, I think, in general, doesn't do well. Mm-hmm. So we jump to a conclusion. What's the fastest conclusion? And we didn't consider, could there be also something else going on at the same time? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, yeah.
And this is a tough thing because, you know, the way our healthcare system designed, where they are siloing different providers into, oh, here's your expertise, it's migraines, or here's your expertise, it's endocrinology, but it's only thyroid. And so we're putting these practitioners into these, you know, basically these little buckets where people are going in and their narrow view of that person's symptom is the only thing being treated. And so, you know, what you and both of you and I had talked about is like, you know, obviously you guys aren't dietitians, but you have to know like general about nutrition and hydration and all that stuff, because if we're not talking about those things with our patients or referring them out to people who, you know, can be taking that holistic approach and kind of filling in some of those gaps, then we could be missing a big piece of the puzzle. I mean, in my practice, some of the biggest root causes of migraines I see, you know, PMS related, you know, a lot of hormone imbalance going on where they're really experiencing that during a specific time of the month. There's definitely dehydration. I see a lot of NSAID use, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which is kind of like a vicious cycle, because we know that disruptions in the gut microbiome can also impact migraines and inflammation. Mm-hmm. And so I'll see patients taking them for their migraines, or for PMS. And then, you know, it's really taking a toll on their gut and their liver, which is then furthering the imbalance there that's creating, you know, chronic headaches or migraines. I've also seen patients who are just under fueling. They're not eating enough chronically, dieting, things like that, and actually dealing with chronic migraines that completely resolve once we, you know, address their dietary habits. So either, you know, like you said, doing a full assessment and seeing, you know, the whole picture of everything that's going on is so important, but I think it's just great to know that physical therapy can be part of a treatment plan and could be one of the major, you know, needle movers for a patient who has migraines or headaches for whatever the root cause is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely agree that it has to be all of it. So if you're in a super inflamed state, I mean, it is just like, you know, like it's like you touch the outside of the knee and it is just like, they want to jump off the table, right? You can't then go and fuel your body with things that are going to promote inflammation, right? So inflammation isn't bad. That's how the cellular process heals. But sometimes it's such an over accumulated amount that we're not making things get better faster. and oftentimes I do see people in chronic pain as well. And chronic pain just meaning that the pain has persisted for an extended period of time. And with that, trying to break some of the, how the body cycles are going, some of it does come down to physics and biomechanics and just habitual things that are keeping the body in this inflamed state. But usually if pain has persisted for multiple months, And imaging isn't like, you know, the knee is blown to shreds, right? You know, like, we're not seeing this, we're not seeing that. But the patient's telling me, like, I cannot do X, Y, or Z. Like, this is like impacting so much. I can't sleep. I can't go up and downstairs. I can't blah, 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 all these I can'ts. Then we have to consider everything, right? So what is the dietary imbalance looking like? What is the sleep pattern looking like? What is the biomechanics? What's that looking like? What's the mental health component looking like? So yeah. The cross referrals are really important to work together to say, okay, we need to support this individual. I'm not a nutrition expert. I can say though, like, this is probably just asking some basic questions of like, what does your day look like with food? They're like, oh, well, I can't eat anything. Well, what do you mean? I eat cottage cheese and bread. Mm. Oh, okay. Oh, that's good to know. I'm really glad I asked. I think we need to further look into that. So I'm going to put that over here because that needs to be addressed. But what if I hadn't asked the question? Mm-hmm. What if I just made an assumption that this person's eating a balanced diet? You know, like, I would be missing so much. And then, you know, kind of tapping into some of the, you know, asking a little bit about interpersonal relationships, maybe some of the stress management techniques. How are you handling some of this? And if it's like, oh, I'm going through a divorce and this and that, and I love who knows what. It's like, okay, all right. So that seems like a big deal. So let's also consider like working on, like, I'm not a mental health counselor. So like when it's a big deal like that needs help, that needs attention. And so now us, we can consider the physical body and be supportive in what some of the other people in our community of healthcare do. And mm-hmm. now we can actually get somebody to go from this really not fun place in life to a completely different person. So it's amazing what can happen when we actually think about the body as a whole system that functions versus just the knee hurts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more than that.
Yeah. I think just giving the listeners that concept of, you know, just not being narrow focused on, you know, the knee hurts, so the knee's the problem. And you know, mm-hmm. had Dr. Perry on here. He talks a lot about like the interconnection between pain and, you know, all these other, you know, trauma and emotions and things like that. And so I think that it's just good to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. In terms of how you both practice, I'm curious to hear, what would you say are some of the biggest, I don't know, like imbalances or weaknesses that you see, and maybe it's in specific populations you see these, or types of people or careers or things like that. I mean, what are some things that people can do from a preventative standpoint to keep their bodies healthy? Like, I remember when I went into physical therapy in college, I was a runner. I was running every day. Thought I was super strong. And I remember going in and they said, no, you're weak. You're weak like everywhere. Your glutes are weak. You know, that was a big area for me. So I'm just curious, like from a perspective of what can we do to kind of help ourselves? Like, what are some things that you commonly see in your practice?
So Dr. Jess and I have kind of two different practices right now. I am seeing a lot of patients that are injured at work. And so for me, my might be a little bit different than Dr. Jess. I have a ton of shoulders. A lot of shoulders and a lot of necks. And with shoulder, a lot of times, especially the male population tends to really focus on the chest. So a lot of overhead press, bench press, you know, a lot of chest, but we forget about our back. And every day, most of us, regardless of our job, we're not kids anymore. We're not running backwards, playing on our belly, arching up. We're not using those back muscles like we did as a kid. So we start to get really rounded shoulders, and kind of the front of the chest starts kind of closing down. And then I'm going to turn side, and then our head, we start to kind of lean forward. How many of us are on our phones all day, you know, sitting there looking down at your phone? So seeing a lot of issues with those two. And the neck and the shoulder, I will say, are very connected. A lot of the muscles that support the shoulder run up through the neck. So it's very common for those two to be injured together. Mm-hmm. So really focusing on, I'd say, two key things is opening the chest, you know, going to the doorway, putting your arm on the doorway and kind of opening that chest, pressing the front of that chest forward, could really help open that area. And then also bring, if you can, if you work at a computer, or bring your phone up. So you're not like looking down at it, like bring stuff up to your eye level. So that way you're just in a better posture. I would say that and lower back are the kind of the two biggest things that I see. And lower back is definitely something a lot of people hurt their back and they're scared to move afterwards. Cause for some reason we just have this picture that our back is this fragile area. And reality, if you think about it, it's just like when you, get a paper cut on your finger. I had a mentor give me this analogy and I love it. When you get a paper cut on your finger, it's bleeding. You're going to put a Band-Aid around it and you're going to hold the finger stiff for a while until that cut closes. But you're not going to leave the Band-Aid on forever and you're not going to leave your finger stiff in a straight position forever. You're going to use your hands. So when you take that Band-Aid off and you start moving that finger, it feels really tight, like it hurts in that area. You know, it's uncomfortable. But the more you start moving it, all of a sudden your hand comes back to normal, your finger feels like much better. And your back is the exact same way. We can't live in the straight world. We have to turn, twist, bend, squat, you know, all of that. I'm not saying do that day one, but we don't want to be fearful of that movement as we go through the healing process.
Mm-hmm. That's super helpful because I think, you know, a lot of us tend to move in like a very linear, like you said, very linear type of robotic almost motion. Like I was talking to a client about this the other day, not from like a coaching perspective, but we were just sharing like exercises we like to do for core. And I was talking about like, you know, throwing a ball to the side of the wall and twisting your, you know, your torso and thinking about moving through that full range of motion. So that's, yeah, it's a good reminder that, you know, doing some of these exercises to help strengthen the back and low back even, because I think a lot of people, especially if you've had previous injury, can be very fearful of that. And I think the big takeaway too is do it with a professional, do it in a way that, you know, is slow and optimized for where you're at and what your injury is. And that's really helpful. Don't skip back day. Noted.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly. Well, and if you think about when are we the healthiest, when we're younger or when we're moving, and look at what kids do. Everything that a kid does, we as adults should be doing in regards to play and movement and getting on the ground and twisting and arching and stuff. Now, if you haven't done it in 20 years, you don't get up tomorrow and try all of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all those movements are natural and that's how our body stays healthy.
Mm-hmm. So I love the tip about moving your screen up. I think that's super helpful. Are there any tips for somebody in terms of their day-to-day life other than like kind of engaging their back? What about those braces that people use to like help their posture? Are those beneficial or actually harmful?
So Dr. Jess, I'll speak for myself. I'll let her speak for herself. If someone has like a pretty significant issue and we need it to kind of help support to teach and like proprioceptively help them to understand, that's great. But we don't want to use it forever because it becomes almost like now those muscles don't have to work. Mm-hmm. So now they don't even have to fire to hold in that position. So now they're getting weaker instead of stronger. So, you know, giving some proprioceptive feedback to our brain to know, okay, that's where it should be. That's great. And that's where it's like, okay, yeah, they're good for that, but not for long-term. It's a short-term for education for your brain.
Okay. That's helpful.
Yeah. I've actually never prescribed one because it slows down the process of learning. So I'm much more like likely to use a kinesio tape or something where I'll get the person into a neutral posture and apply the tape. And then that way, if they lose the posture, they'll feel the pull of the tape and then they'll have to self-correct. And so you're going to get the learning done quicker that way. It's if there's something so bad that we need to pull those shoulders back, then we're missing something as therapists, right? Like, is the pec too tight? Do we have too much kyphosis? Like, what is going on that's preventing this posture from being achievable? But I try and tell patients, I'm not going to put a crutch in your hand if you don't need a crutch. You need to stand on your foot, you know. So, and if you can stand on your foot, you need to stand on it. Otherwise, your healing is going to take months longer. So, I mean, the way the brain works with motor control and retraining is if you can just get to the root of whatever it is that you're trying to do right away, then, you know, we just speed it up. So, but yeah, like posture is literally motor control. It's just what's the position of my joint? Is it neutral? Is it not? And how can I build up my endurance to maintain it for longer and longer periods of time? So, and then that specificity of how I work out and how do I strengthen and how do I put all of this together into a balanced routine? So when you talk about like, what do I typically see that people are missing? I pulled up my little anatomy app because I love this thing and I geek out about it with my patients all the time. So I'm going to geek out with you as well.
I love this.
You know, it is what it is. But I think it just kind of helps to show. So if here's the back of the body, okay? Mm-hmm. So we can see like tons of muscles, right? And this is how we think of the back of the body, right? And you can recognize that. Now what I'm going to do is I'm taking away layers. Mm-hmm. I'm taking away those big muscles. So those muscles are called our global muscles. So, but look, when I start getting deeper, I've got a lot more layers of muscles back here. Okay. And look at the back of the hips. So check out all of these muscles in the back of the hips. This is not glute max. Mm-hmm. These are your hip rotators. When you were talking about like your glutes are weak, it's mm-hmm. these deeper glute muscles that mm-hmm. get really weak. And they're all of these muscles, when we refer to stabilizing muscles, these are the muscles that attach to joints and control the position of the joint. So there's other muscles called global muscles. Those are the muscles that move our bones in space. So my bicep bends my elbow, right? My rotator cuff is stabilizing the joint, okay? So when we work out, we're very good at working out our global muscles, mm-hmm. but we're not very good at working out our stabilizing muscles. And so in physical therapy, when you think of physical therapy exercises, you're typically going to be seeing a lot of stabilizing muscle type of exercises, but they're isolated and they're boring. And you're like, I don't want to work out like that. That's not my long-term solution.
I agree,
right? Like they are. It's like, oh, I'm going to have this TheraBand on my ankle and I'm going to move back and forth and I'm going to do a 10x3. And it's like mind numbing. Believe me, like I work in this field. It's like, I always tell people in the beginning, we just need to like fire some muscles and get them going. But I want to get you out of this phase as quickly as you want to be out of this phase. I want to be out of this phase too, because it's boring. But sometimes we just have to learn how to talk to those muscles. But then as you start kind of preparing people for getting back into that more active lifestyle, the biggest thing is as a runner, as a dancer, as a who knows what you do, right? It's how can I make sure that when I'm strengthening, that I'm keeping my stabilizing muscles strong and my global muscles strong so that I can continue to support my joints and stay nice and healthy. Plus, obviously, we want that cardiovascular exercise because we want to keep that heart and lung pumping. That's a big thing that people are missing. They put their eggs into a strength basket, but leave out the cardiovascular basket. And we can't forget about mobility and flexibility. So how can I balance mobility, flexibility, strength, which includes global and stabilizing, and my cardiovascular? So that routine is ultimately how we can get into a preventative state for keeping our body. Every system of our body will benefit from that, whether it's neurologic, endocrine, cardiovascular, musculoskeletal, you know, every system of the body benefits when we're actually maintaining mobility, strength, and our cardiovascular health.
That's so helpful. What if a client was listening here and they were, this is going to be kind of a loaded question, but like, what would be an optimal routine for me to do on a weekly basis that would hit all of the points that I need to hit, right? People are always looking for like the most effective, most efficient way that they can stay healthy and fit. You know, and of course a lot of people care about physical activity from a physical standpoint, like how they look, more of like superficial, which mm-hmm. I'd be lying if I said I didn't exercise to also like how I look. But I think it's also, you also want to be able to do that for a long period of time. And some people are also motivated by the longevity aspect of it, knowing how, you know, preventing injury can also, like you mentioned, increase your quality of life and decrease injury. So if you were to put together like maybe a week of, you know, workouts, what would that include?
So Dr. Justin, actually, we were just talking about our favorite exercise. So first we'll kind of tell you exercise and then we can, but one of my favorites that kind of gets everything is burpees. Mm-hmm. And I know we all tend to hate them, but they will get your heart rate up. So you're getting cardio in there. It is strength. If you go down to the ground, you're doing push-ups, squats, you can add the squat jump, you're getting plyometric. You're also getting that mobility of, as an adult, we don't get down to the ground enough. And so it is getting you flat on the ground and it's making you stand all the way up multiple times. So it's kind of keeping that strength up. So it is just one of my favorite exercises that kind of entails all of that, because it's hard to have, you know, as you were saying, a specific routine that you could do for a week. It's hard because if you're doing the same thing each day, you're going to be missing different muscles, you're going to be missing different areas. So I know everybody wants that like real specific routine, but it's so hard because when we are, you know, if you look at cardio, it's recommended 150 minutes a week. That can be very different for someone that is a runner that goes and runs for 2 hours in one day. You know, that's 120 minutes they've already got. But, you know, someone that is just walking, like, it's okay. It can be 10, 20 minutes every day, you know, things like that. They ideally want 30 minutes in a day, but I think those guidelines are easier to give and follow versus like a specific routine. But burpees mm-hmm. is a great exercise. It is an awesome exercise.
Well, and I think like you can generalize it out, right? Yeah. So, and like, you know, the way I normally, I've got like a little format that I give to patients when we're getting closer towards the end of discharge is saying, okay, so what does your 150 minutes of cardio look like? So I don't do all of my 150 minutes. Well, I do 150 minutes with running, but like running isn't my only cardio, right? So I really like high intensity interval training as well, because I'm not like a big on, like, I don't like to go into a gym and just strengthen. That doesn't fill my cup as much. I really, that's just not my jam. Somebody else really might like that. So they do their 150 minutes of cardio, whether it's walking or running or getting on an elliptical, getting in a pool. You know, it doesn't matter. The whole point is you elevate the heart rate and you maintain it for an extended period of time, ideally 30 minutes, 5 days a week. So, but when you talk about blending them, that's a possibility, or we can keep them separated. So I could walk and do 2 to 3 strength days, and then just making sure that you do an active warm up. And then when you cool down, you stretch. So now, no matter what, you're getting in your mobility and flexibility, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do my active warm up before my cardio, and then I'm going to stretch afterwards. I'm going to do my active warm up before my strength, and then I'm going to stretch afterwards. So now I'm balanced, right? I've got 150, 2 to 3 days of strength work, and I'm good. So that could look a lot different for other people. If you do high intensity interval training and you actually are doing exercises where, like a burpee, where you're going to elevate your heart rate, and then you're going to do 1 or 2 exercises where the heart rate comes back down, but not too low. And then you're going to do something where the heart rate elevates again. So now your heart rate's going to be in this range, which is elevated for an extended period of time. So let's say you do 3 days of walking or jogging and 2 days of high intensity interval training. Mm-hmm. You just got it done. So it could look a lot different for a lot of people, mm-hmm. but typical guidelines, 5 days a week, 30 minutes of cardio, 2 to 3 days of strengthening, ideally stretching, mobility, 5 days a week. You just put those into your cardio and strength days, and then you are balanced.
Mm-hmm. I like how you integrated everything. I think that's key for people to understand that you don't have to think of all these different types of movements or activities that are essential for optimal health as being separate entities. That it's like a whole session dedicated to one thing, because, you know, we're all human and we all have limited time and we want to make the most of it. And, you know, I think it's interesting. You see these different trends go around on maybe social media, I suppose, is where kind of a lot of these start, where people start only doing Pilates, or people start only doing weightlifting, or people start only doing HIIT, or, you know, they're walking 10,000 steps plus every day because they heard that that's the way to get your dream body. And I think that is where we miss so many benefits of other types of exercise. We really miss the mark there, right?
Yes,
we're not building strength by walking. We're not building mobility by lifting heavy weights all the time. So I think people need to understand that, you know, yes, we have to work with what you enjoy. Mental health and enjoyment of activity is important, but also understand that diversity is what's going to keep you in the game the longest. And if you can work with someone who can personalize that for you and say, let's see what makes sense with your schedule and your body mechanics and injuries and all that stuff, and then devise a plan that makes the most sense for you. But it sounds like diversity, you know, just like anything in life, right? Mm-hmm. Not going 100% into one thing, whether it's CrossFit or, you know, whatever it is. Yes, get your body moving, but understanding the importance of other types of exercises.
One of my favorite types of exercise is it's called Every Minute on the Minute. They say EMOM, and it comes from like a CrossFit area. But what I love about it, I don't do CrossFit, but I still use it for my workouts, and it's a set time. So it's like you can pick 5 exercises and you do them 3 times or 4 times. So it's a set 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but you get really good strength and you get good cardio if you pick the right exercises in it. And what you do is, for example, you pick 5 exercises and you start with exercise 1 and you do it for a minute. And then when the timer goes off at a minute, you go to the next exercise and you go through all 5 of them. And you set your numbers reasonable. So like, let's say for me not being in the greatest shape right now, like 10 burpees for the first minute. And so if I finish those 10 burpees in the first minute, I get to rest until that second minute starts. But let's say I don't finish and that beep goes off and like you got to get into the next exercise, you don't worry about finishing it, you go to the next one. And I always try to do a cardio exercise first, and then I'll do like pick 4 other exercises, but I'll go down to the ground, up, so I'm kind of moving throughout the whole time, so my heart rate gets up. So that's one of my favorite, and it's also short, you know, you get a lot in 15-20 minutes.
I love that. Yeah, the 7-minute workout, that's one that I used to use a lot while traveling. Like, it's 7 minutes, similar, like it doesn't have that competitiveness, which I love. Like, I love, oh, I got to finish this before.
Yeah, I got to finish before the minute. I get to breathe. If I finish early, I get to breathe.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's great. And so yeah, there's lots of ways to be efficient with it. I'd love to talk about some natural remedies for pain relief, because this is something that I've done a lot of research in, and curious kind of how you guys guide your clients. You know, there's specific herbs that have a lot of research when it comes to inflammation. A few that come to mind for me, things like curcumin, which is the compound from turmeric. I did my thesis on this. Really great anti-inflammatory benefits that extend even beyond that. Probably one of the most well-researched herbs. Things like quercetin and boswellia, omega-3 fatty acids, trying to get those in the diet as much as possible, but supplementation can also support those inflammatory pathways. But, you know, hydration, sleep, all those things. I mean, what are some things that you guys are talking to your clients about, knowing that NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, are incredibly hard in the gut and the liver? And if we can, you know, kind of advise or guide on other options, what would be some of your top?
I think my biggest top is always going to be understanding your symptoms. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when we take a pill or we apply something, we are expecting that we have no control over how we're feeling. Mm-hmm. And that this outside source is like the only thing that can affect how you're feeling. When honest answer is that typically something is making your pain better or worse, right? I sit on the couch and my pain is worse. I sit at the dining room table and my pain is less. Okay, well, let's discover what's going on with the couch, right? Most likely it's the position of your pelvis. It's going into a posterior pelvic tilt, and the arch in your back that's supposed to go in one direction has reversed. And that puts the highest amount of pressure on your discs. It's the worst position that you could possibly be in. So maybe let's think about how we can build up some pillows around you and underneath you to stabilize that pelvic position, because you're sitting on the pelvis. So if your base is not stable, then the spine isn't going to feel good, or your neck isn't going to feel good, right? So oftentimes it's really taking a step back and understanding, when do I start to really get my symptoms, and what can I do ahead of that to not have that happen? Or when it is happening, change something up. And then that way it can make a huge difference. I mean, if I've got shoulder pain and I sleep on that side, I've just compressed right into everything. Okay. Mm-hmm. So not sleeping on that side is going to be helpful. And if I use my knowledge of the shoulder joint and I put a pillow under this arm to make sure that I'm not going into a fully internally rotated position or compressed position, if I'm on the other side, if I support that shoulder and see that space that I now kept open because I've got a pillow here, now I've got blood flow going through the shoulder. So it's clearing out the inflammatory cells and not letting them accumulate. So now I can sleep with my shoulder in a neutral position and I don't wake up feeling like, holy goodness, like, you know, someone hit me with a baseball bat and all I did was lie in bed. So it's never all I did was, right? It's, you know, there's no way that sleeping could cause that. Yes, it could.
Oh yeah. I can very much relate, because I'm currently pregnant and I always sleep on my back, and I started trying to train myself to sleep on my side. And had I known this tip, I wouldn't have woken up feeling like I got hit by a tractor trailer. I woke up and I said to my husband, I'm like, this isn't going to work. Like, I can't do this, because I can tell there is no, the side of my head, like everything was just completely stagnant. Like, I could feel that there was inflammation when I woke up. So yeah, I'm going to use that tip.
You're restricting blood flow. That's all it is. Yeah. So it's just a matter of understanding, like, is it when I'm in the car that something's really tough? Is it when I'm trying to sleep, when I'm trying to sit on the couch, when I'm at my desk at work, when I'm walking or moving? So first identifying that, and then what can you do to change something that likely your body is just telling you, I don't like this. Mm-hmm. So you need to change, right? I've been there. Believe me, I live in a glass house and I throw stones all the time. And so like, it's like, I'll wake up and be like, oh my gosh. And I'll look and like, my pillow hasn't been under my head. And I've been all, you know, it's like, I've got this headache and I'm like, oh goodness, I can't see out of this left eye right now, because my head is hurting. So there's like, it's, but I could have affected that by kind of setting myself up a little bit better when I went to sleep, you know?
That's super helpful. I think the root cause is always so important, right? Like, with patients who have PMS, migraines, or have, you know, pain with food even, or inflammation with food, like, those things take a lot of time to typically work on. So the times that we're using these types of herbals and stuff are when patients are really needing that quick relief. But you brought up such a great point that says, at the end of the day, like, that mindset shift that medication is taking away our control, in a sense. I think that was very powerful for people to understand that, you know, herbs, even while they're, you know, maybe less harmful and maybe have less side effects than other medications, they still ideally shouldn't be used as a crutch or long term. And so using them maybe in our short term, but yeah, ideally getting to the root cause and just learning the things that you can do to support your body. That's great.
Yeah. Not saying don't use them. I'm not saying that by any means.
No.
It's just make a change. And if you still need something, then use it.
Yes.
But like, it's just it's so easy to be like, oh, let me just rub this on my knee while I like sit and compress it.
Yeah.
Don't compress it and then rub it on.
Yeah. No, that's great.
I was going to say, so on, besides positioning, one of my favorite things to help with pain and change pain is with needles and dry needling. Because one, it can do just so many things. So if you're having, let's say a tendon that's inflamed, you kind of go in there and you cause like a micro trauma to the tendon, but it's good. It's restarting that inflammatory process that has to happen. So a lot of times we think when we sprain our ankle or when we have acute injury, that's like within the first 10 days, we want to take NSAIDs and ice and all this stuff to decrease the inflammatory process. But we're actually decreasing its ability to heal itself. Our bodies were made to go in and break down the tissue that was damaged and then rebuild it up. And it's during that 10 days, you want to try to reduce swelling during that time. But you really want that inflammatory process to happen. So needling, let's sometimes when it's chronic and it like can't fully heal, you can take those needles to kind of artificially recreate that process and get it kickstarted again. But in regards to pain, when you needle someone, it releases both opioids and non-opioids, and both of them are super helpful in pain relieving. And it also can cause like central or cortical desensitization. So it can make changes at your spinal cord and at the brain level that like nothing that our hands or positioning can do. So one of my favorite is needling to really help with pain relief. And it's not, I wouldn't say, it's very minimal pain. There's some aching, but the more when you do the needling and you're in that area, the more that it aches, the more actually therapeutic it is, because that aching is telling us we're in the right area. That aching is telling us the chemicals are being released. It's actually a very beneficial thing.
Yeah, that's, I've actually had it done once, and I'd love for you to describe to the listener, like kind of what it is, because it's definitely not my expertise, but I had a bad hip injury when I was running, and at Plug for Wellness in Motion here, it's a great local company. They do a lot of holistic treatments specifically for a lot of athletes, and I'm the sports dietitian for them. And you know, they're like my 911 call if I'm ever dealing with an injury. And so the dry needling was incredibly helpful. But for those who have never heard of it, like what is it?
So a lot of people have heard of acupuncture. Dry needling and acupuncture are different in theories. Dry needling is going to go much deeper. It's going to affect the tissue in different ways. We're not trying to change organs and meridians. However, we use the exact same needles. So if you've ever had acupuncture done or seen an acupuncture needle, they are very, very small. I always tell people they are smaller than you've ever seen in healthcare because there's nothing inside of them. When you're going to get a shot, an injection, they have to kind of, there's something inside that they're trying to get into your body. So these are very small, thin needles. They're stainless steel that you just put in through the tissues, and we get, so for example, low back, you know, we're trying to get down through all those tissue muscles. I mean, all those tissue layers, all the muscles, to get to the spine. And then you twist it and you're going to release different chemicals when you're twisting versus when you put it in. And it really helps muscles relax. It helps pain relief. It helps. Sometimes you can even turn muscles on in our lower back when we get injured. We have very specific, they're called multifidi in our lower back that actually get turned off and they don't come back on with just exercise. So needling has shown you get down into that area, it can really help kind of turn those muscles back on as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, and think of like needles, because people get, it's just, this is a big confusion with dry needling and physical therapy and then acupuncture. So needles are a tool, that's it. Mm-hmm. So a neurosurgeon uses a scalpel, a podiatrist uses a scalpel. Very different uses of the same exact tool. So mm-hmm. that's all it is. And then how we apply that tool for treatment is going to be different than how an acupuncturist applies the tool for treatment. Mm-hmm. So it's not acupuncture. I think there's been a big misconception out mm-hmm. there, and it's a needle, it's a tool. We as physical therapists are using it from a very mechanical perspective of turning a muscle on, getting it to activate, getting that wiring back to the brain to say, hey, this muscle needs to activate. Or if it's just a trigger point that's all gnarly, to get that trigger point to let go. And again, then we have better activation from the brain to the muscle for how it's going to function. So, I mean, it's like you can see crazy results with dry needling if it's truly indicated. Like you'll have a patient that has a trigger point in the muscle in the back of your shoulder, one of your rotator cuff muscles, the infraspinatus, big old fat trigger point, your measure range of motion. It's like 90 degrees, maybe a little bit higher. They're, you know, grimacing. You needle that muscle. It twitches a ton. It's crampy and sore, but like, who cares? You're going to get range. Then it's like, oh my gosh, I can move, because it now knew how to coordinate the position of the joint. And now you're not jamming. Now that shoulder can drop and you can complete the rotation. So it's really, really cool what it can do when it's indicated. So it's not a cure-all. I think other people think, oh, just stick a needle in it and like my pain's going to go away. sometimes it helps a ton, sometimes it doesn't. Just like anything in healthcare, it has to be what's right for you and your physiology.
Yeah, no, I will say, like, from my own experience, it did not cure my pain, but I would say the process definitely sped up my healing, and that was great, you know,
very, way faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did a research with it, with my fellowship, on knee arthritis, and it's really neat because we're finding it's used for way more things than just muscles. Muscles is where we started with it. Mm-hmm. And now we're finding, like, it's really cool to kind of get down to the bone of the knee, and we can help stimulate cartilage cells being recreated and reproduced, and trying to, I'm not going to say reverse the effects, because that's not been shown yet at all, but that's kind of where their mind's thinking is, can we, the cartilage cells that die, and that's what causes arthritis because the cartilage is broken. They're looking at, I was with a sports med doctor, and they were talking about how they're starting to think that it's not that the cells die, but they get turned off and they no longer know how to reproduce. So if we could somehow stimulate them, you know, the future of medicine, you know, could they help with regeneration? Could they help just with the pain decrease or limiting further destruction of the knee?
Mm. Wow, that's very cool. Well, I look forward to potentially seeing those advances down the road. I know a lot of people would benefit from that. So before we wrap up here, I would love to, you know, just put myself back in my injured shoes, right? Because I've been injured many times in my life. And I feel like every time I get injured, I really learn a lot about myself. And I, you know, kind of tune back into, you know, some realities of life of, like, okay, you know, exercise can't be your only coping mechanism. You know, are you taking enough rest days? What are some other hobbies you enjoy? And I coach a lot of clients, you know, when they're injured, just because, you know, we're talking about nutrition, and maybe they're feeling really bad about the fact that they're not moving their body in the way that they used to be. So I guess, what would each of you kind of offer to a client who is in a place right now where they're injured and they're feeling really discouraged and down about it? Jess, you mentioned, like, that I can't do this, I can't do that. So what would be, like, a good takeaway message for those clients to receive?
Yeah, I think a big thing is, when you are injured, it does cause you to pause, right? And instead of focusing on what you can't do, focusing on what you can do. And oftentimes, like, I've gone through a lot of injuries myself as well, and I have to take this pause. And many times what led up to the injury was some sort of imbalance in your activity, right? And so when you actually have time to just pause, and, you know, like, as a runner, like, it's very easy to not cross train and not stretch enough. Mm-hmm. So easy to do if you enjoy running, right? And so kind of taking that pause and saying, well, if running right now is either decreased mileage, decreased pace, or just, you know, need to stop altogether for a period of time, then what can I focus on that's going to give me a better foundation? And mm-hmm. so when you take that time and pause and rebuild your foundation, you're now jumping off, when you get back into the activity, you're jumping off from a much stronger foundation, and you're going to return stronger than you were. So it's actually, like, a really cool time in life to just step it back a little bit and reconsider everything. And that's what I love doing with people, is, like, let's shake it up completely. And just really take this time to say, what do you want? Where do you want to go? What's this reach that we're going for? Like, I want, on the first day, I want to know what that reach is. Like, you might be somebody that's got cancer, going through radiation. I do a lot with lymphedema and breast cancer and stuff like that. Like, and you ask, what's this look like? And they're like, well, I just want to be able to wash my hair. I get that. But what's this look like? Like, where do you really want to go? And so how can we think about that now and start laying out the framework for what that's going to look like? And when you actually think, like, what do I want? Where do I want to go? What do I want my body to be able to do? Then it's like, all of a sudden you're like, all I see now is potential versus I don't see what I can't do. I see the potential of what I can do. And each of these steps is now going to get me closer to that. And so it's a really, for me, it's a very special time for me to be in somebody's life, because we can get such cool mind shift change which is, I just consider it a privilege. So I
did competitive gymnastics my whole life into college, and now work with a lot of athletes with gymnasts. And it's a sport where when you're injured, everyone tells you to take off. But I can tell you as a gymnast myself, you will never find a gymnast that will actually take time off. It just won't happen. So my big thing with them, and then I take it with all my patients, is like what Jess said, I find what they can do. So it's like, okay, we can't do this, but all right, this week you're going to do this, this, and this. And it's just literally finding everything possible they can do in that moment. So then they focus on those things, and like they get to go back and they're staying their whole practice and they're doing their whole time. They're not leaving early. One of the things I can speak for gymnasts. One of the things we hate is when you're injured, you typically don't do the event. You're given a list of exercise and told to go do this. And most of these kids are 10, 12, 14, 16. Who is going to go take a list of this long of exercises, conditioning, and go sit by themselves and do it? We as adults don't do it. Yeah. So like expecting children to do that and do it every day for hours, like, no. So my big thing is like, find everything you can do. And it may look different, as Dr. Jess was saying. Mm-hmm. Like maybe they can't run, but you can go swim. Mm-hmm. So like get in the pool. You can run in the pool, you know, mm-hmm. put a belt on and start running. So it's just finding every little thing that they can do and like putting that out there. And I never use the words "you can't" with them, because that's all they've heard. So it's like, okay, let's start with, this is what we're going to do. We're going to hold off on this. Mm-hmm. Until this happens. So if you can show me this skill well without pain, then we can add in another one. Mm-hmm. So it's like always using that positive words and not saying, nope, this is a can't do, this is a can do. You know, it's like, this is wait, right second, you need to show me this first.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love that. So where can people find both of you and stay in touch or even, you know, work with you?
So I'm in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. So I've got a small private practice. You can see the vibe is very chill. we do have a gym space as well, where we do some big movement patterns. So the clinic is called Core Essentials Physical Therapy and Wellness. And then we've got a digital side of the business as well. So I've got some online courses and an app that kind of does whole body strengthening. So it's meant to be supportive to working out safely to get stabilizers and global muscles all firing in one whole body workout. So I'll send you the link for that.
Awesome. I'll be sure to put that in the show notes. Mm-hmm.
And then I have a clinic out of Naperville, Illinois. We're about 30 miles west of Chicago. And it's called Level Up Osteopractic and Wellness. And again, one-on-one, small. Dr. Jess and I both believe in that one-on-one personalized attention. And then Dr. Jess and I also have a podcast called Two Gals in a Glass Half Full. You can find us on YouTube or anywhere podcasts are as well. And we just really focus on making these small changes in our life, but not just physical, mental, sleep, kind of everything.
Toxin-free living, just all sorts of anything that's positive in a wellness lifestyle. We love talking about it and hopefully sharing the information with others. Because it's like small changes really can, over time, can make big, big differences.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for coming on here. I learned a ton. I need to go change my pillow game. And look forward to staying in touch with both of you. Thank you so much for your expertise and all the work that you do.
Thank you very much, Erin.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
All right, bye, ladies.
All right, bye.